to have you smiling. I'm delighted to have you hanging out with us today on our program. I have been looking forward to this hour. Alice Randall joins us for the hour to talk about her groundbreaking country music career and her new book, My Black Country. The book also has a companion album of the same name, celebrating the black female experience in country and folk, and features the songs of Alice Randall recorded by some amazing artists like the one you listen to right now, The Ballad of Sally Ann by Rhiannon Giddens. Alice Randall's country music contributions are vast, to be sure, but her backstory is the thing for me. It's that backstory I love. I have interviewed over the course of my career in broadcast just about everybody, but rarely anyone with a backstory as fascinating as Alice Randall's. As I said, I've been looking forward to this hour, and I'm pleased to welcome Alice Randall to this program. Alice Randall, how are you today?
As we say down south, better since I'm talking to you, Tavis. You are living history, living legend in journalism. So I am so thrilled to be bringing these country legends to the legend, Tavis Miles.
Oh, no, you are too kind. This is a mutual admiration society. We have a lot of fun this hour because I love you just as much. I love your boldness. I love your creativity. I love your artistic genius. I love your transparency. I love your backstory. And I want to get into all that in this hour. Let me just start with this. Broadly speaking, how would you define the contributions of the black female experience, black females in country music, country and folk for that matter?
Well, country would not exist without the contributions of black women. Mm. It requires blackness. My definition of country music is actually Celtic, English, Irish, Scottish ballads, plus black influences, plus evangelical Christianity. It needs all of that to be country. And some of the examples of that black influence is Arizona Drains. Anybody out in Los Angeles listening, she was a black woman, Kojic piano player, who in the early part of the 20th century was putting the piano that would define country on country. But Lil Hardin Armstrong, that's Louis Armstrong's second wife, mm-hmm. in 1930, there's a song called Blue Yodel Number 9 that people say is the most important, the most iconic country song of all time. The name they put on the label was Jimmy Rogers. But in fact, three people played on that record. One was Jimmy Rogers, a white man. One was Louis Armstrong. We all know who that is. Mm-hmm. And the third was the true genius, Lil Hardin Armstrong, born in Memphis. She probably brought the song to the session. That is the first million selling country single of all time, 1930. And it was Lil Hardin was the only genius who played on every bar of that record, but her name didn't get put on it. Mm. She was erased from the history. But that, for me, was Lil's record. She was the mother of country, all country, the mother of black country, of country, the midwife of all country. Mm. Lil Hardin Armstrong.
Mm. It's funny you should say midwife. I'm talking about midwifery in our third hour today. We're talking about that as we celebrate Black Maternal Health Week. So we'll talk about that in the third hour. But I love her. She's connecting dots already. She didn't even know that. That's how brilliant she is. She's prescient and prophetic on top of being an artistic genius. Let me stay with this L.A. notion just for a quick second here. Because I was, again, I learned a lot going through your book. That's why I wanted to have you for the hour. We could spend hours just unpacking your book, say nothing of your career. But you suggest that Los Angeles, I mean, get this, people, Los Angeles, Alice Randall suggests, is the capital of black country. How is that the case?
Well, absolutely is. One is, there's a first family of black country, and the first family is D4 Bailey, Lil Hardin. I just told you about mm-hmm. her. Their genius child is Ray Charles, who dropped 1963 Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music, which is probably the greatest country album of all time. Mm. That album was largely recorded in Los Angeles, and Ray Charles lived in Los Angeles. But it's not just about Ray Charles. It's about Herb Jeffries. Herb Jeffries was the bronze buckaroo who in the 30s and 40s would star in and produce black singing cowboy westerns. And they filmed them on a black-owned dude ranch right outside of Los Angeles. But the people who owned that were Black people in Los Angeles. Mm. And then we got Charlie Pride. He'll come through. He doesn't spend a lot of time there. But we haven't even finished it. I told you about Arizona Drains and that Black woman. It was a Black church in Los Angeles that said, we can have music, instruments, as well as voices. But Lionel Richie, let me call his name, he's going to write those great Kenny Rogers country hits in Los Angeles. But I'm going to finish with, second to last, Bill Withers.
Ooh.
Bill Withers, grandchild of Black coal miners from West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
He, in my opinion, is an extraordinary country, Black country artist. But they called it was so big, they called it pop. But Grandma's Hands, Railroad Man.
Mm.
These are country songs.
Yeah.
I have to mention, the original people founding the city of Los Angeles, Black and brown cowboys, and they sang songs. The real cowboys in the 19th century California were often Black and brown, and they've been erased from the story.
L.A. is my lady. It's home for me, and I love my city of L.A., and I've thought about it in a variety of ways, but never until I read this book by Alice Randall, My Black Country, did I ever consider L.A. as the capital of the Black country. Something else we're going to add to the docket when we brag about the City of Angels. Just getting started with Alice Randall on Tavis Smiley.
Helping to make you the most knowledgeable person in your circle of friends. This is Tavis Smiley.
And this is Tavis Smiley, who is honored and humbled today in this hour to be in conversation with country and folk music legend Alice Randall, whose new book is out. It's called My Black Country. More about that in just a second. We went to break a moment ago. Let me back up. We started playing Rhiannon Giddens covering Alice's song, The Ballad of Sally Ann. We went to break a moment ago. Miles, my board, I played a track called Who's Minding the Garden. This is Reese Palmer's interpretation of Alice Randall's song, once again called Who's Minding the Garden. But I want to come back to that because I want to play it from the very beginning. And I want to play about a minute or so into it, Miles, because I want you to listen to the lyrics. This is the brilliance, the absolute artistic genius of Alice Randall. Listen to the lyrics of this track called Who's Minding the Garden, as sung by Reese Palmer.
There's a bay up in Alaska, oh, so cold and clear. A home for creatures great and small till the pipeline appeared. To bring us fuel to heat our homes and gas for us to drive. Now the sea is black with oil and all the fish have died. So who's to tell us why? There's a forest in Brazil, sheltered by the rain, where the tall trees made the air we breathe till the cattle barons came. They cleared the land for grazing, 50,000 trees a day. Now the Amazon's on fire, and that's progress, they say. But what a price to pay. Who's mine? They planted for tomorrow, just harvested their greed. There's a line in the Bible, says we'll reap just what we sow. But who am I in the garden when the garden won't grow?
It don't get no deeper than that. I'm sorry, y'all. It does not get any deeper than that. If that doesn't remind you of Marvin and what's going on. And speaking of Marvin, Alice Randall is from Detroit. We'll talk about that part as we move through this hour. She was there when Motown was ascending, was hanging out with Stevie Wonder and side stage when the Supremes did their thing. So Detroit is home, but she has made her mark in country and folk, and what a wonderful legacy it is. Her new book is called My Black Country. I wonder if I can just pause for a second, Alice Randall, and ask you to tell me about that track, Who's Mind in the Garden?
Environmental racism is real, Tavis. Hot zones. Black people are being damaged and destroyed, and particularly our children. by environmental racism. We are disproportionately dying of asthma in these hot zones. And where, from where you're down from, Gulfport, Mississippi, we have what we call Cancer Alley down there. Yeah. Environmental racism is real. And I was calling that out in the 20th century. Echo grief is real. Black people, you heard that first song, Rhiannon Giddens, that's about a man lynched between his wedding and reception. People want to talk about farm to table, but when your family have been hung in the trees, when you've been worked like an animal in the field, it's hard to love those fields, and we have to mend with it. We have to return it to our sense of garden. But that's what I love about country and Black country. We deal with the real. Mm. So environmental racism is real, and I hope that song, Recy Palmer has a beautiful voice. It's like balm in Gilead. Mm. And when you hear that song, I want you to think about the long line between eating a hamburger, a fast food hamburger, and your kid living in a hot zone. There's a line between those things, and we got to start thinking about it. We've got to start fighting, realizing green is black, that we have to be fighting environmental racism because it's killing our children on a daily basis.
One of my favorite songs, you just touched my heart with that reference to balm in Gilead. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul. There's a balm in Gilead to make the wounded whole. One of my favorite songs. You touched me just with a reference to it. Here's why I stand in awe of you. There are many reasons, but here's one, Alice Randall, because you are bold enough to just walk your black self up into country. But when you get there,
41 years ago.
Trust me, I'm about to go there. You take your black self, you just walk up into country 41 years ago. You changed the game. You changed the narrative. But you are bold enough to actually say something in your lyrics. I once said of Snoop Dogg, who I love, if you ask me my top five for hip-hop, Snoop is in my top five. And it's hard. I would debate you on whose flow is coldest, Snoop or Biggie. I can't ever decide who got the coldest flow, Snoop or Biggie. But here's my point. I once said of Snoop that that nigga would be dangerous if he was actually saying something. His flow is so cold. If he was actually saying something, he'd be dangerous. But here you are with your black self in country, and you got the nerve to actually say something in your lyrics to make folk wrestle with the black condition, with black humanity, with black suffering. Where does that courage, conviction, and character come from?
Being born in Detroit City in 1959, I was born the same year as Motown Records. I'm going to say something wild here since you called that some of my hip-hop legends. I say I come from the country song that my father, the unrecorded country song. He said, "What's wrong, little girl? What's wrong, little girl? I got $40. The morning takes $100 to get anybody killed. Then in the afternoon, when the junkies needing a fix, $40 nailed to the dope house door, get anyone killed. What's wrong, little girl? I got $40. I come from tough people. Mm. I am a nonviolent woman, but I come from tough people. And the important part about that narrative is my father always thought there was a solution to every problem. Mm. And it started with telling what your problem was. Mm. Speak up south, you're not down south. So I think that being inspired on the positive side, that I was born the same year as Motown Records, and I was told the even sweeter story that Anna Records, the company founded by Barry's sisters, was a year older than Motown Records, that I was empowered to be a woman who would be putting out words into the world when I was still a little girl.
Mm, Lord Jesus. Tell me about your parents, about your mom and your daddy.
Well, I came by my love of country real, because my mother, my grandmother, and my aunt, all black women, all love country music. And it was the only thing they loved in common, which will tell you something about me, because it should have been me, but my mother did not love me. I had a hard childhood because I had an abusive mother. And country music was balm in that Gilead. It was something that we did have in common. And, you know, my father's family were from straight up in from Selma, Alabama, near Selma. So my grandmother sang me the song she had heard in Air. My Aunt Mary Frances was a snazzy woman who knew Billie Holiday. She played me that Ray Charles over and over. That was her favorite album. And my mother, crazy mother, she liked that honky tonk country because she was just all. But all three of them introduced me to country. And I heard a lot of blues music, and I love blues. My daughter, but my life was too sad for me to hold on to the blues. The way you said, Balm and Gilead, part of what country has is black gospel in it. Mm. And that black gospel will give you hope. And I needed the hope. That's the truth.
Mm. Talk to me about how that hope for you has sprung eternal all these years.
Since that very first song I wrote, when I was in a Motown cherry tree, I wrote my first song before I was 5 years old, and it was Daddy Don't Go in That VAR. I carried that song with me to Nashville. Mm. It wouldn't be the first song I got recorded. The first song I got recorded was a song called Reckless Night, but which I also brought with me to Nashville with me. But some of the important early ones I did, one was called Small Towns Are Smaller for Girls. Because small towns are smaller for girls. Mm. And small towns are even smaller for black girls. But when people write about that in country, they're imagining all the little girls living in small towns like Gulfport are white. But in fact, we know a lot of black people, a lot of black girls are living in the small towns of the South. And I wanted to put those women, those heroes, those everyday heroes, and sheroes who make sane like you make a bed every day. Mm. I had to put those into the country song canon. Mm. It's also hidden black genius. You know, the banjo was invented by black people. So many black brilliant women have contributed to country, and it has been not acknowledged. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get the acknowledgement for them.
Yeah, I'm pushing my way toward that huge Trisha Yearwood hit that you wrote back in 1994, but just I don't need to color this much more than this. Just talk to me, since you went to Nashville a moment ago, about what it took, about the journey, in fact, to break the Nashville color barrier when you arrived there.
Well, some of it was really hard. But one man, I was at Hank Williams Sr.'s publishing company. And the head of that company at the time just put his feet up on the desk, shook his head, and said, you need to go back to wherever it is you came from. Mm. And a person I was looking forward to meeting, because he wrote a lot of great songs, he met me. I can't even tell you exactly what he said. He looked at me. He took four steps further away from me. And he said, I've been at this too long. If I have to compete with in girls from Harvard for cuts. And, you know, I stepped right towards him and I said, I am and you do. And my biggest song is bigger than his biggest song nowadays. I claimed it. You want to call me an in girl from Harvard? That's right. That's who I, that's what I am. And you got to compete with me. And I plan on beating you.
And speaking of Harvard, it's I mean, obviously you have been a professor for quite some time now, but it's clear, unlike some artists, and I'm not demonizing or casting aspersion on anybody, but you seeded yourself, you rooted yourself deeply in this. You studied this stuff, you learned this history, you teach this history. Why was that so important for you, that part of your journey, which is connected, of course, to your artistry, that you would steep yourself in the history of all of this?
Well, it was that erasure, because what I was telling you, that in 1959, when I was born, Ray Charles had a hit on a song called Just for the Thrill. It was a number one song. Mm-hmm. Lil Hardin wrote that song. Lil Hardin's coming through Detroit, the world where I'm living. Do you think she didn't know that she played on a million selling hillbilly hit? She probably called it a Peckerwood hit. I don't know. But she knew. Louis Armstrong knew he played on it. In my world, they talked about that. And you know what? In 1983, right before I moved there, when I went to the 25th anniversary of the Country Music Association, and then President Reagan was there and Vice President Bush was there. When Roy Acuff stood on the stage and talked about the founding and called Jimmy Rogers' name, and didn't call D4 Bailey's name, Lil Hardin's name. He knew it too, because he had been around. He knew it, but they didn't call those names. Mm. I wanted to go back and claim for this first family of Black country all the honors they deserved. I'm really thrilled that Beyonce album has Linda Martell on it. Mm-hmm. But I published the first big article on Linda Martell back in 2010 because I wanted Linda Martell to have her flowers. So I'm thrilled now. My little article went to thousands of people or tens of thousands. Now the whole world, millions of people know about Linda Martell. That's all of us working together because erased Black genius needs to be made visible. When I say if country owes a debt to Black people, which it does, what doesn't in America owe a debt to Black people?
I believe that every race of people ought to be judged by the best they've been able to produce. And Alice Randall is among the best that our race has ever produced. Her new book is called My Black Country. A great deal more to cover with her when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
More of Tavis Smiley when we come forward. May 1st daily in the Mert Park, Los Angeles, California. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
That's Adia Victoria with her cover of Went for a Ride, Alice Randall's track. Alice, tell me about this song, please.
Well, this is one of those songs that's honoring all the Black cowboys that were in the 19th century, 20 to 30% of cowboys were Black. And another, because I know your audience loves a deep dive into our history. You know, a lot of those cowboys, Black cowboys, became Pullman porters when the West got closed, and they became the first big Black union, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. So as a little girl in Detroit, I'm hearing that story about A. Philip Randolph, and I'm hearing those porters knew they used to be cowboys, and they brought that wildness into the union. And that's, again, erased history. Nat Love was a very famous Black cowboy who became a sleeping car porter, and he wrote his own autobiography and published it. And he was one of the models for me writing my own autobiography. And I love the beginning of that song. He's black as the sky on a moonless night. And I have seen people and met people. I met a journalist on this tour who said they heard that song and they thought the man was wearing black or depressed. They didn't realize, even though it starts off, he was black as the sky on a moonless night. They didn't realize the cowboy was black. Mm. When Adia Victoria sings it, you realize it's one black excellence speaking, acknowledging another black excellence.
Yeah, your songwriting genius is more than arresting. It is humbling. Speaking of writing your memoir, why now? The story is that your daughter has been pushing you to do this for a long time, but how did she finally convince you to do it, and now? Why now?
Well, she has been pushing me to do it for a long time. The truth of that, Tavis, is about 5 years ago, a little over that, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I was thinking, if I only had, unfortunately, I'm enjoying great health right now, if I only had a little while to live, what did I want to do? And one of the things I wanted to do was tell the story of my 40 years in country and Western music and the history of Black people in country music. And then I wanted to hear my songs sung like I had originally imagined them. Mm. And there's this woman, I want to call her name, Ebony Smith, all those cuts you just heard, produced by a Black woman from Memphis, Tennessee. She lives in L.A. now. And she was the engineer on Hamilton. She's done some amazing stuff with Cardi B, all these people. She rode to the rescue of my legacy, got all these amazing young Black women to come and reclaim my songs, ride to the rescue, a posse of Black and female genius riding to the rescue of my legacy. And I love that. No, I love everything about that.
No, I love it too. I love how you frame it. I love how you express it. It's not that just that you're writing a great memoir, which many people are just enjoying, yours truly included. It's not just a brilliant memoir. It's not just your amazing discography, your library, your corpus. It's also these novels that you have written. You have squeezed so much out of one life. These novels, though, Alice.
Well, yeah, the first one was The Wind Done Gone, that Black retelling of Gone with the Wind. And so, you know, if you read my book, you'll see how one of the record companies really ended up getting tricky into I signed something I shouldn't, so I lost a lot of money. So I wouldn't continue to write songs at that moment at the height. 2 weeks at number one, I decided I'm not writing them anymore. But that led me into writing The Wind Done Gone. Mm-hmm. I've had Pushkin and The Queen of Spades. I've had a great Black spy family novel, Rebel Yell. I have had Ada's Rules, which helped a lot of people lose a lot of weight and restore their own health. And most recently, I wrote a novel called Black Bottom Saints that Whoopi Goldberg even shouted out to me about on Instagram. It's about the roots of Black music in Detroit City. And so these two books, Black Bottom Saints and now My Black Country, that's my Motown to Music City journey. Yeah. I was born in one Black Riverside music town, and I'm going to die in another one. And in between, and I'm going to die so happy because I have spent my life around a lot of Black excellence and creative, but also collaborating with people all over the globe who wanted to do the right thing.
Yeah. I started this hour by telling the audience that of all the people I've interviewed in my career, and God knows I've been blessed to interview just about everybody over the course of these decades, you are the ultimate Renaissance woman. And again, that's one of the many things I celebrate about you, that you have let no grass grow under your feet. You are on my short list of the top five African-American Renaissance women I've ever met and interviewed. Maya Angelou would be on that list, of course. But you are an amazing Renaissance woman, and I so celebrate that. Let me go back to this. You slid right past this.
Wait, can I interrupt?
Sure.
Can I interrupt you 1 second?
Sure.
You called out Maya. So you know, she loves country music, and she makes a big cameo in my book. One of the things I love to do with her back Subversive, I got a chance to write a video of the year for Reba McEntire. Mm-hmm. Before this, and I put Maya Angelou right in it. When you see Reba reading to her child, she's reading I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Mm-hmm. Is that book meant so much to me and inspired me about some trauma I experienced. But I put a monument. I snuck in a monument to Maya Angelou right in the middle of Reba's video that became Video of the Year.
Mm. See, this is why I love Alice Ree. I keep trying to explain all the reasons I'm such a huge fan of hers. But here's another one. I mean, that she is Black excellence herself. She is the epitome of Black excellence. But every chance she gets in her novels, in her songs, in her productions, she's always advancing the notion, always trying to make sure that we wrestle with the humanity of Black people, and always doing her part to put Black excellence on display. When we come forward, I want to go right back to this point she made a moment ago, kind of ran right past it. But I am curious as to what happens when you've lived a rich and full life already. But 5 years ago, she is facing an aggressive form of breast cancer. Every one of us at some point has to do what I call a dance with mortality. We all have to do that dance with mortality. But I'm curious as to how she processed her way through that. And whether or not she spent any time thinking in that moment about her legacy. And I still ain't got to Trisha Yearwood yet in that big hit, X's and O's. We'll talk about that when we come forward with Alice Randall on Tavis Smiley.
Let's get back to more of this rich dialogue with Tavis Smiley.
More of this rich dialogue with Alice Randall. Just an honor to have her on this program talking about her new book and the companion album. Just a delight to have her on. Let me ask Alice, if I can, since you mentioned the aggressive form of breast cancer you faced some years ago, how did you process that particular moment in your way through it?
No, it was hard. It unfolded very wildly. The first doctor said, this is 20% chance something really terrible. It's a small chance that something isn't anything. And it's like 40% chance it's going to be something you can beat. But we got the worst result, as that turned out. And what I loved was I immediately, it became this really interesting, I said I wanted to fight for anything that give me 1% chance more of living longer. Mm. So I was really practical. I brought my warrior spirit to it. I had my daughter. I had it was a team of amazing Black and brown women who came together. One of the things I dealt with was the racism that the kind of breast cancer I had that's much more common in Black women has less research, less treatment than a lot of the breast cancers that more commonly hit white women. So you want to feel Black and weird, you know, you get one of those cancers and you are right in, no matter your Harvard degrees, this, that, the other. But I loved I found my optimism. I have felt along the way. You know, one of the oddest things about my life is having a mother that literally did not love you. Mm. I knew a long time ago my worst day was behind me. Mm. And I knew that is just the truth. And I've used that as an advantage every day. And I just decided when I came up, I was about to do some film stuff. It just won a little prize in New York. I said, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm too, if I only have, you know, a certain amount, I didn't have time to start something new. But I did have time to flower and bloom all the seeds I had planted. And so that's when I got really busy. That old thing, she not busy living is busy dying.
That's right.
I just decided I'm going to enjoy it and do it till I die. I'm not borrowing any trouble. I'm going to get up and enjoy every, I did the double mastectomy because I didn't want to have to come back and do anything. I did everything that would give me 1%, 5%. And we've had so far a best case scenario for starting hard. Things really improved over time. And even the weirdest time when we were waiting for the biopsy happens, watching old movies with my daughter, she put up a blow up mattress. She's the last single on this. I'm going to tell you the story. We cut it out of the book. She's the last single on this album. And when you have these big surgeries, you get all these drains and it's hard to deal with these drains. And I had very little hand strength from the major mastectomy. And I'm trying to do it the first time. And these tubes are spurting blood and God knows what all over the bathroom. And something about it reminded me of some trauma with my own mother. And my daughter said, borrow my memory, borrow mine. My best memory is being connected in your belly to you by a tube. And I have raised a poet that said, when blood is flying around the room on her and me, and I say, I can't do this. She said, borrow my memory. Best memory I ever had is being inside your belly. And I knew if I died that next day, it was worth having that, to have a poet who said to me, borrow mine.
We are who we are because somebody loved us. In Alice Randall's case, it wasn't her mother, but the love of her daughter and the love of other family members and friends and certainly fans these days. It's quite extraordinary. We are who we are because somebody loved us. Our remaining moments with Alice Randall, author of the new book, My Black Country, album by the same name. Delighted to have her right now on Tavis Smiley.
Seeking the truth. Speaking the truth. This is the Tavis Smiley Show. Sounds different, huh? This is Tavis Smiley.
Alice Randall, I could do this for hours. This is even richer than I thought it would ever be. You're an amazing person to talk to, and I've enjoyed this immensely. I don't have a language to describe what this has meant to me. Let me close in these 3 minutes with two things. Number one, tell me about that Trisha Yearwood hit, that big hit back in 94.
2 weeks at number one, the best part of that, Aretha Franklin came to Nashville to play at the Ryman Auditorium. And she invited me backstage. She does her own list. And she asked me, how does it feel to have written a classic? And that song shouts out to Aretha Franklin. She's got her God and she's got good wine. Aretha Franklin and Patsy Cline. She's an American girl. So we put Aretha's name in front of Patsy Cline. And Aretha appreciated it. That was a highlight. That was as good as 2 weeks at number one. So I loved writing a song. And it all came from real life. Women get it. It's about the keeping up the balance between love and money. We're always doing a dance with that. And it's easier to do it when you listen to the right music. Yeah. And I hope that we put out some music that helps make people's days easier, brighter. Yeah.
And we've gone full circle back to Detroit talking about the Queen of Soul. I digress on that point. In the 90 seconds I have left, I want to ask you this. I read so much preparing for our conversation, your book and everything else I could get my hands on, just trying to be ready for this dialogue with you. And this line jumped out at me like I can't even describe, Alice Randall. You said that when you arrived in Nashville to start breaking that color barrier, I had to bring my authority. I had to bring my authority. In these 60 seconds, tell me about how we, in our own lives, our own working witness, sometimes have to bring with us our own authority.
Always. We have to judge ourselves. We have to keep the standard high for ourselves, the excellence and the goodness, because we cannot count on the world to be our mirror. We have to find it in ourselves. So that voice, that loud and small voice inside yourself, when you ask her, is this excellent? Is this good? Is this necessary?
Her name.
And find the people like you.
Oh, you're kind. Her name is Alice Randall. The book is called My Black Country. There's a companion album by the same name. Alice Randall, you put a smile on my face for hours and days just having the chance to talk to you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We love you, and there ain't nothing you can do about it.
I love you. It's a pinnacle to be on Tavis. I'm thrilled to be here.